I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. Let's go back 50 years. Imagine a trip to Havana, Cuba. Author Peter Maruzzi takes us there.
It's January 17th, 1958. You're an unmarried 36-year-old ad exec catching Pan Am's flight 442 from New York to Havana, arriving at 6 p.m. on a Friday night. After checking into the flashy new Hotel Capri in the city's stylish Vedado district, you freshen up, dress up, tan linen suit, snazzy tie, polished shoes, and catch the elevator to the Capri's rooftop lounge to sample one of those famous Cuban drinks, perhaps a daiquiri or a mojito. A musical trio plays The Breeze and I and Siboney before taking a break, the signal for you to go back down to the air-conditioned lobby and into the humid tropical night air. A cabbie suggests La Floridita, which you've heard about, as a fine place for a meal. Cradle of the daiquiri, huh? It's good, too. And so is the lobster thermidor. The maitre d' offers you a Monte Cristo No. 2 cigar, the one that looks like a torpedo, which you accept. Smoking Havana cigars takes time, so you pay the bill and wander outside in the direction of the Malecón, passing Sloppy Joe's bar, looks crowded, and the back of the Sevilla Biltmore, where you can hear laughter and Cuban music drifting from the hotel's roof garden restaurant.
That's Peter Maruzzi reading from his new book, Havana Before Castro, When Cuba Was a Tropical Playground. It depicts a time before Fidel Castro's revolution and before the U.S. embargo against Cuba, when Havana was a top destination for Americans.
It primarily got started as a playground in the 1920s during Prohibition. It was within 24 hours you could be from dry Florida to wet Havana and drink completely out in the open without any worries about getting in trouble. And so that was its big appeal for an entire decade in the 1920s. It was also a very popular place for wealthy Americans to go because during the wintertime, there was a racetrack, there was a yacht club, there were all sorts of huge mansions that were constructed. The DuPonts had a huge beachside home. So it was sort of a place for the rich and the working class and middle class to escape to.
So that's interesting. It wasn't just the rich. There were working class from all over the United States who went down to Havana?
Oh, absolutely. It was a very easy and inexpensive way to get as far from America as you could without having to spend a lot of money.
And, of course, a lot of Latin music was quite popular in the United States at the time, and you could hear it kind of on site if you went down to Havana. And, you know, this is when radio, recording, and cabaret were all kind of at a crossroads. One of the legendary performers at the time was Benny Moré, El Bárbaro del Ritmo, the Barbarian of Rhythm. Let's have a taste.
Pero qué bonito y sabroso bailan el mambo los mexicanos. Mueven la cintura y los hombros igualito que los cubanos. Pero qué bonito y sabroso bailan el mambo los mexicanos. Mueven la cintura y los hombros igualito que los cubanos.
I'll have another shot of rum, please. That's, you know, I mean, it conjures up the fun and the gaiety down there. But, you know, Havana had its dark side, too, Peter. I mean, a lot of this kind of nightlife and free-for-all was happening precisely because of several decades of corruption. Does that tarnish for you and your attempts to capture this period in its fun and decadent side?
Oh, it's really not that different from what's been going on in Las Vegas since the late 1940s. So you had the mafia characters there. You had the big hotels and casinos and resorts that were all hooked into that sort of thing. So I guess if you can condemn Vegas, you can condemn Havana because they were closely linked.
Well, I don't want to kind of speculate on what's going to happen to Las Vegas, but you go through this book, and it's a lengthy book. I mean, this beautiful collection. You get to kind of the end, page 250-something, and you say, oh, now I see why there was a revolution. Did you get that sense too?
Yes and no. The revolution was occurring about as far from Havana as could be in the other end of the island, Santiago. And so there was this almost like a bubble around Havana where music and beauty and tropical nights and all of that were going on. Plus, people were just making a lot of money. It was an amazingly popular tourist destination, so a lot of the local Cubans had a big stake in that part of the economy, too.
But weren't there a lot of people also not making money?
Yes, but less so in Havana. Havana seemed to be an island of wealth where it was somewhat protected from the poverty of the rest of Cuba.
Now, Fidel Castro and his rebel army entered Havana in January of 59, and the playground pretty much ended. I'm just wondering if you foresee a time when Havana will kind of rise again as this major destination city for travelers and tourists and, you know, playboys as a trade and vacation destination.
I don't know about playboys, but I think what makes Havana so incredible in the 21st century is that it has, because of the revolution, has a reservoir of amazing architecture and a feeling of the mid-20th century all the way back to the colonial period that you can't find anywhere in the world, although it's crumbling. And then what's going to need a lot of help is clearly the restoration of the city. But just its intrinsic beauty alone will draw people from, well, once the travel ban is lifted, from America in the thousands. Now, whether or not it will be, I don't think it'll ever be like it was. It's not going to have the kind of gambling and corruption, and maybe you'll have some nightlife, but nothing like it was.
When did you last go to Havana, Peter? And I'm just wondering, were you able to kind of like summon up the 1950s, even through these kind of, you know, crumbling attempts to romanticize it today?
Last year, and what was surprising about it is how many of the restaurants and bars, at least some of the more famous, survive, such as the Tropicana, the incredible nightclub where it has a stage show that hasn't changed in 50 years. So you can walk through the city and you can capture the feeling, and it's not that hard, of what it was like 50 years ago. Now, what, of course, you can't escape is the fact that these buildings are falling apart. They really haven't been maintained in 50 years, so it's kind of bittersweet, but it'll be able to be brought back. I'm very optimistic about that, and I think it's going to be a wonderful place for people to visit.
Peter Maruzzi is author of Havana Before Castro, When Cuba Was a Tropical Playground. Good to speak with you.
It was great. Thank you.
Oh, vida. Si pudiera.
A little resampling of the great Benny More there, courtesy of Cuban singer Equis Alfonso. Now, if you want to kick back this holiday season with a tropical cocktail from Havana, then may I recommend to you the La Floridita Daiquiri, which Peter Maruzzi includes in his book. You take 1 ounce fresh lime juice and roll up your sleeves, people, and squeeze the limes. 1/4 ounce sugar syrup, 1/4 ounce maraschino liqueur, and 1 3/4 ounces white rum. Shake well with a generous scoop of crushed ice, strain into a pre-chilled cocktail glass, and you can take it from there. If you miss the recipe, then just go to theworld.org. You'll also find a slideshow of images and photos from Peter Maruzzi's book. Also, thanks to station KQED in San Francisco for helping us out today. From the Nan and Bill Harris studios at WGBH, I'm Marco Werman. Hasta la vista.
The World's Global Hit podcast is brought to you by the Medtronic Foundation, supporting the health of people and communities through grant-making, employee giving, and volunteerism. The Medtronic Foundation, on the web at medtronic.com.